every scene flooded in the streets of Paris and all over France in a freedom march against a new security law. The massive protest is held against President Macron's government that is pushing a new bill that restricts the ability to film police. Human rights associations and media are unanimous. This law would allow police brutality to go undiscovered and unpunished.
There's a huge popular opposition against this law. Even the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations and other international bodies criticize it. A social majority in this country refuses the implementation of this law. Since a long time, they alert the government on police brutality and violence against women. Violence against women during the lockdown is exploding, and the government remains inactive and guilty.
Two major events this week plead in favor of the protesters and of the importance of video footage to denounce police violence. First, French police dismantled a migrant camp in central Paris. The French government ordered an internal police investigation after police officers were filmed tossing migrants out of tents and intentionally tripping one while evacuating a protest camp.
It is important to film this kind of situations because it's part of freedom of expression. Filming with our phones is almost the only way of publishing this kind of violence against migrants, people from the suburb, against everybody.
And then a second video showed the violent arrest of a black music producer in Paris. Three police officers repeatedly punched and hit him during 20 minutes. The man told that the officers made racist insults.
Thanks to the images showing the beating by a kind of private militia attacking a music producer, the truth has come out. Without this video footage from a surveillance camera, the man would be in prison accused for using violence against the police. That shows the importance of having a counter power in this country.
Under a huge pressure, Interior Minister Darmanin announced disciplinary proceedings as soon as possible, but that might be too little, too late. In the meantime, the protest is going on. A large majority in the French parliament voted in favor of the security law, but the Senate still has to approve it. Right-wing senators, a majority in the Senate, declared they will rewrite the law because it is unconstitutional. Chris Den Hont, Paris.
Tens of thousands of Sudanese have bid farewell to their last democratically elected prime minister, who died of COVID-19-related complications at 84. According to the National Umma Party, which she led until his death, Sadiq al-Mahdi died in hospital in the United Arab Emirates, where he was receiving treatment after becoming infected with the novel coronavirus in October.
I think the loss of Sadiq al-Mahdi, the Umma Party leader, and the Sudanese, the most intellectual person in the Sudanese political process, is so great loss. This is it will be reflecting on all and whole the political process.
Imam Sadiq is the greatest one in the Sudan, and this era need him. Why? Because according to the government,
Al-Mahdi served as a prime minister in the mid-60s and again in the mid-80s before he was overthrown in a coup of 1989, which led to rise power of President Omar al-Bashir. After being forced out of office, Al-Mahdi remained a leading politician in Sudan. In a statement, Sudan Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok described him as one of the most important figures of thought, politics, literature and wisdom in the country. Meanwhile, senior National Umma Party said that the party will continue to follow the anti-Israel policies taken by the late Sadiq al-Mahdi.
We have our own doctrine based on the Islamic ethics. We are against the normalization. If the needs arise, not Al-Burhan, neither Hamdok will decide on behalf of the Sudanese people. The elected, the coming elected parliament will decide on the behalf of the Sudanese nation.
I think this constitution will go in the same road of the leader Sadiq al-Mahdi in the normalization, against the normalization or any establishment of the relationship between the Sudan and Israel.
Al-Mahdi was a well-known Sudanese political figure who played an important role in public affairs and wrote several books addressing the situation in Sudan.
For more than 60 decades, Sadiq al-Mahdi was icon of democracy, Islamic thought, and a strong opponent of imperialism. in Sudan and abroad. Mohammed Fazari from Khartoum, Twin City of Omdurman.
At 2:30 p.m. local time on Friday, in a countryside area east of Tehran, a truck loaded with explosives blew up to intercept the car carrying top Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. Eyewitnesses say five or six gunmen then rushed from a nearby vehicle and opened fire on his car. Fakhrizadeh was seriously injured and taken to hospital, but medics were unable to save his life. The incident immediately sent its shockwaves across Iran and beyond, with Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif calling the attack an act of terror and linking it to Israel. Inside Iran, the assassination comes as a shock. Less than 24 hours after the incident, people from all walks of life gathered outside the Iranian parliament to condemn the assassination, which they view as grave as the U.S.'s assassination of top IRGC commander Qasem Soleimani in January.
What happened to our nuclear scientist was carried out by the same terrorists who killed Qasem Soleimani. Like Mr. Soleimani, Fakhrizadeh offered many services to our nation.
If we back down on this terrorist act, the U.S. and Israel will become more insolent towards us. We have gathered here to urge the government and lawmakers to take a tough stance towards the perpetrators to avoid further such incidents.
Fakhrizadeh served as the head of the Research and Innovation Organization of the Defense Ministry. Iranian officials say he had a long history in defense innovations and had made key efforts to promote Iran's nuclear energy program.
Remember that name, Fakhrizadeh.
This had made him the number one target of Israel's intelligence services, which have a track record of targeted killings of Iranian nuclear scientists nearly a decade ago.
Israel is not willing to see Iran's advancement in science and technology. It killed four other Iranian nuclear scientists, and now it assassinated Mr. Fakhrizadeh. But Israel should know that it cannot stop Iran's peaceful nuclear program, because those martyrs have trained numerous young scientists who will take the lead in this field.
Observers say the assassination of the Iranian scientist comes as part of Israel's attempts to disrupt Iran's nuclear energy program, which Tel Aviv accuses of having military dimensions. Iran has time and again dismissed such allegations and signed the 2015 nuclear deal with the world powers as a sign of goodwill.
Fakhrizadeh now becomes the fifth Iranian nuclear scientist who was eliminated in a terror attack. While all indications attest to an Israeli involvement, Iranians here demand that the government take a harsh revenge. This, they say, would reduce the chances of more Iranian scientists becoming an easy target for terrorists. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
After the abrogation of Kashmir's special status in August 2019, all electoral processes in the region were suspended and Kashmir came under the direct control of New Delhi. Also, the role of major pro-India political parties in Kashmir was belittled after New Delhi detained all pro-India politicians. The absence of people's political participation created a void in Kashmir's political sphere and raised many questions on New Delhi's claims of normalcy in the region. And to break the ice, amid tough security measures, New Delhi is holding local elections in 8 phases, ending on December 19th. A large number of voters has braved cold weather to vote, and each of them has their own reasons.
Our educated youth are doing menial jobs. We have problems like improper roads and lack of electricity. Who will take up our issues to higher-ups? That's why we voted for our trusted candidate.
Election boycott calls passed by the pro-independence camp of Kashmir were highly supported by the people of Kashmir. But this time they say they want to fight for equality and justice via elections.
We are seeking respect since we are treated as second-class citizens. The country's progress hardly reaches us. By casting our vote, we tell the champions of democracy to do justice. Earlier, our election boycott was an excuse for them. Now we will give them no excuse. We want equal rights and treatment.
While voters have their own reasons to cast ballots, candidates have their aims too.
I can't promise my people jobs and land rights because with Article 370 everything is gone. My goal is to safeguard my people against the plots of people with anti-Muslim agendas. I believe in peace and tranquility and I want to work for secularism in my bloc.
The main contesting parties in this local election are Bharatiya Janata Janata Party, Indian National Congress and Alliance of Local Political Parties.
Amid heightened security, the elections in Indian-administered Kashmir are being portrayed by many as a step towards normalcy and peace in the region. However, experts say such electoral processes have hardly helped Kashmir in the past, adding long-lasting peace is only possible when the issue gets permanently resolved between India and Pakistan. Shahana Bhatt, Indian-administered Kashmir.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is part of a speech delivered on September 21, 2020 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, via video conference with participants in ceremonies throughout the country to honor the veterans of the Sacred Defense Era. The meeting was held on the occasion of 40th anniversary of the Sacred Defense.
No one except for mothers themselves can really understand motherly feelings. However, these mothers sent their youth to the front lines. They said, I have offered my son in the way of God. I have thankfully had the blessing to regularly and frequently meet with the families of martyrs, with their mothers and fathers. I witnessed that the mothers of martyrs had an astonishing spirit and sense of altruism, which was truly great to an immeasurable extent. This would not have happened if it had not been for Islam and for a great spirit of self-sacrifice, which constitutes a brilliant chapter in the voluminous book of the Sacred Defense. This is another point.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith to be stronger.
The fifth point is that the Sacred Defense Era stimulated investment for the country, and it engendered valuable assets for the country. The fruits of the Sacred Defense are many. First of all, the security of the country was achieved thanks to the Sacred Defense. In other words, the Sacred Defense showed that one should pay a very high price for attacking and transgressing against our country. This was proved thanks to the Sacred Defense. This ensures the security of the country. When a nation shows that it has the determination and power to defend itself and to reciprocate aggressors' aggression, this makes transgressors hesitate before launching an attack on this country. And if they wish to act intelligently, they understand that it is not in their best interest, as they would have to pay a very high price. Our security originates from this.
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah. Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, praises to
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, Kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
The Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee. So recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O Most Merciful of the Merciful, O Allah, Decree for me on Thursday five things, which none embraces but thy generosity, and none supports but thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey thee. Worship by which I may deserve thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that thou makest me secure in the places of fear through thy security. And placest me in thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
The debate.
Hello and a warm welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. In Iran, lawmakers have given the green light to a plan to address the illegal sanctions imposed on the country. Iranian parliamentarians want the Rouhani administration to produce 120 kilos of uranium at 20% purity level and also make use of advanced centrifuges, among other things. Well, some analysts regard this as the first reaction to the Friday assassination of an outstanding Iranian nuclear scientist. The Iranian parliament speaker has stressed the move signals the end of the one-sided game as regards the Iran nuclear deal, or the JCPOA.
Iran's parliament or majlis has endorsed a bill titled Strategic Action to Remove Sanctions and Protect the Rights of the Iranian Nation. The legislation, which still requires the endorsement of Iran's Guardian Council, is aimed at tackling U.S.-imposed sanctions against the country. The bill obliges the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran to produce uranium enriched at 20% purity for peaceful purposes and store inside the country at least 120 kilograms of the product annually. The bill also mandates the installation and operation of advanced IR-2M and IR-6 centrifuges. Furthermore, it calls for a metallic uranium production plant to be put into operation in the central city of Isfahan. The Iranian lawmakers have also demanded the optimization and relaunching of Iraq's heavy water reactor and the designing of another such facility. The bill also stipulates that Iran will withdraw from the additional protocol to the non-proliferation treaty if the remaining parties to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal do not fully comply with their obligations and restrictions against Iran's trade continue to remain in place. The bill comes after repeated complaints by Iran that is not reaping the fruits of the nuclear agreement known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, while it's remained committed to the agreement.
Truth of the matter again is that the gap and the key gap and the key point of concern was a serious lack of commitment by the West, either in the United States or the European Union, that resulted in new courses of action taken by Iran.
Under the deal, Iran imposed restrictions on its nuclear program in return for sanctions relief. However, U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the deal in 2018 and imposed the toughest ever sanctions under its so-called maximum pressure campaign against the Islamic Republic. Despite the U.S. move, Tehran remained fully compliant with the JCPOA for an entire year. But amid the failure of the remaining signatories to deliver the benefits of the deal to Iran, the country began a gradual suspension of its commitments. The timing of the approval of the bill is also noteworthy as it comes just days after the assassination of prominent Iranian nuclear scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh near Tehran. In fact, an informed source has told Press TV that the bill is indeed Iran's first practical response to the assassination. Bakhrizadeh's killing is the latest in a long line of assassination of Iran's nuclear scientists blamed on Israel. Iran has vowed revenge, and judging by the swiftness and decisiveness of the parliament bill, the culprits and masterminds of the killing should be on tenterhooks.
Now, without much further ado, let's get to the point and start the show. Joining me will be peace and justice activists and analysts Sarbaz Ruhollah Rezvi from the Iranian city of Qom and writer and political commentator Shabir Hassan Ali, who's joining us out of Leicester. Good to have both of you, gentlemen. Welcome. Let's go to Iranian city of Qom. The Iranian parliament argues, Sarbaz, that enough is enough and that the one-sided compliance with a nuclear deal should come to an end. Let's have your comment on that.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I think what the Iranian parliament did was actually, as it was mentioned, the first solid step as a reaction to the assassination that took place on Friday, in which prominent Iranian nuclear scientist Dr. Mohsen Tafrizadeh was, you know, martyred. A couple of hours after the assassination, there was a statement on behalf of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Imam Khamenei, where it was mentioned, 2 points were highlighted in that statement. The first point was that there should be a retaliation, there should be a revenge for anyone who has done this evil act. Second was the path and the move and the, you know, the process that Dr. Fakhrizadeh was following should be followed, it should not be stopped, and it should be pursued again. And the decision that took place today, the decision of the Iranian parliament, was actually a response to that, because the decision of the Iranian parliament today is actually paving the path for development of the Iranian nuclear technology for its peaceful goals. And it is actually because there were restrictions after JCPOA, when Iranians admitted to sign JCPOA. Naturally speaking, there were sort of restrictions on the development of the Iranian nuclear facilities, Iranian nuclear science, and those who were the systems that were working on the nuclear technology and development of Iran. So now, by this act of the Iranian parliament, the problems, the obstacles in front of this progress is actually removed. So this means that the process and the goal that the prominent Iranian, scientist Fakhrizadeh was looking after, was, working for, that is now in a better, condition. Those who are working in this field of technology will now actually find, a better environment in front of them to follow their researches. And this is the biggest response on behalf of the Iranians to the Zionist regime. It was mentioned that, analytically speaking, all evidences are showing that behind this act of assassination is the Zionist regime. So the decision of the Iranian parliament, which was on its proper time, actually showed that Iran has the will for continuation of the path that someone like Dr. Fakhrizadeh was following.
Okay.
And I hope that this is actually a game-changing decision by the Iranian parliament.
Right. Now, turning to Leicester, Shabir, Iranian legislators want the sanctions lifted as soon as possible. Is this too much they're asking for, more than 2.5 years after the U.S. pullout from the deal and the reimposition of sanctions?
I think, first of all, I'd like to extend condolences to the Supreme Leader and to yourself and to all of the Iranians on the martyrdom of Dr. Fakhrizadeh. In terms of the sanctions, I think really Iran needs to get a grip now. This idea of sanctions, they're not going away. Whether Iran cuts down its nuclear program or whether Iran does, whatever, the sanctions are not going away until and unless Iran gives up being an Islamic revolutionary country. That's what they want. I was just watching a clip from an interview given by the pick by the Biden administration for the National Security Advisor. Mm-hmm. And you could almost remove his face and put Pompeo's face, and he was saying the same thing. The key points they have a problem with is Iran's ballistic missile program and Iran's, as they say, support for terrorism, which is support for Ansar Allah, support for Hezbollah, support for Hamas, support for the resistance axis. This is what they want. as long as Iran is doing this, I think we need to be very clear. The sanctions from America, at least, and Europe, are not going anywhere. But on that note, Iran doesn't need America or EU. Iran has allies like Russia, like China, like other countries, the BRICS nations. And Iran can build things itself. Iran is a very strong country. It's a country that's been around far longer than America and Europe put together. Iran shouldn't be bending the knee and acting weak in front of these. I think the move that they made today in Parliament is brilliant, but long overdue. They should do it. They should have done it earlier. They should have never signed this capitulation agreement called JCPOA. Because this agreement, I don't know if any people remember, the moment it was signed in 2015, it was signed, the UN sanctions were removed, and US sanctions were applied by Obama, who everyone said was a saint and was so wonderful. Right. These people are all the same. They're all criminals. And Iran needs to, like, strengthen itself and listen to what Imam Khamenei is saying. That the days of sanctions, halas, make the sanctions irrelevant. Change the system, change the way they operate, remove the impact of these sanctions. The sanctions are irrelevant. They hurt America and other countries far more than they hurt Iran. If Iran strengthens itself and does its reliance on God like it did before.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sarbaz, observers saying that the Parliament plan is actually Iran's first reaction to the assassination of its eminent nuclear scientists. What's Tel Aviv trying to accomplish by virtue of this state terrorism launching against Iran?
You know, look behind to the history of the Zionist regime, you will find that this is a regime that initiated its life with terror. They started, you know, grabbing the land of Palestinians by terror groups of Haganah and blah, 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 other groups who were entering the villages and, you know, beheading the people and, you know, spreading this violence and this terror in the villages to grab the land of the Palestinians. Later on, if you follow the dynamics between this regime and other Arab countries, we see that when Egypt in the 50s tried to, you know, develop its ballistic missiles by the use of a group of the German scientists who were shifted to Cairo to help the Egyptians during the time of Jamal Abdel Nasser to develop their ballistic missile technology, Israel started its acts of terror, and those, you know, German scientists were one by one assassinated. And it was the process resulted in a stop, and all those, you know, German team, they left Egypt because they were feeling there are, you know, terror attacks, you know, threatening them. Later on in the 80s, the same thing took place to Iraq when the regime of Iraq, Saddam at that time, was looking after developing some nuclear weapons by the help of the some of European countries such as France. Again, the same series of the terror acts took place. The same thing took place against Syria in 2007, 2006. But don't forget, this is the reality. I mean, the terror is the reality of the Zionist regime. They are alive, so-called alive nowadays, because of their terror policy. But this terror policy is not going to work against Iran. Iran is not Iraq. Iran even is not Egypt. You know, there are differences between Iran and other countries. And even if Israel is going to stop the process of development of Iran by the use of these terror strategies, it's very clear that they are going to defeat. Because what they did, if you look behind these 10 years of the history, 10, 15 years of histories of these terrors, you should know that the terror process of the Iranian scientists, nuclear scientists, did not start at 2010. It started at 2007 when Dr. Ardashir Hossein Pour, as the first Iranian nuclear scientist who was assassinated, actually there was, you know, still their analysis going on, but he was poisoned by gas, and most possibly it was done by Mossad in 2007, later on in 2010, Dr. Ali Mohammadi, 2011, 12. But one important point is that you should remember that the father of the Iranians' missile technology, Shahid Tehrani Mokaddam, General Tehrani Mokaddam, who was, you know, martyred in 2011, was known to be as the father of Iranian missile technology. There are also some analysis telling that event that took place in which Tehran-e Muqaddam was martyred, it was also a sabotage, act of the Zionist regime as well.
Right.
But within eight years, from 2011, when Shahid Tehrani Muqaddam, the father of the Iranian missile technology, was martyred in Tehran, within 8 years, the Iranian missiles hit the American base in Ain al-Assad in Iraq in 2019. So the elimination, the physical elimination of the Iranian scientists and Iranian prominent figures by the terrorist acts of the Zionist regime is not going to work, as it did not work related to the Iranian, missile technology. The same is going to take place. And after this, as I mentioned, after the decision of the Iranian parliament, it's very clear. It's a system.
Right.
It's not a matter of a few people here and there that you eliminate them and you will stop the process. Stop the process. That's not going to work.
Now, Shabir, some observers argue that this recent assassination of the Iranian scientists was meant to hinder diplomacy with Iran. Are you of the same opinion?
I think what the Netanyahu's and Trumps of the world, the less diplomatic terrorists, if you like, what they wanted was to create a situation where Iran does a knee-jerk reaction to this, starts a war, and halas. And so, yes, they are scared of the nuclear deal, the dead nuclear deal, somehow coming back, because it's very strange. Look, Mossad, CIA, all of these people, they know that this nuclear deal is not anything to do with Iran's nuclear power ambitions and work. The entire thing is about Iran's support for the resistance axis and Iran's ballistic missile program and defense program, and its alliance with Russia and China and so on. Mm-hmm. It's nothing to do with the nuclear program. The nuclear program is, everyone knows, this has been proven time and time again, even by the CIA, by NSA, by Mossad, all of them know this. It's just the media that keeps saying nuclear weapons. They know that Imam Khamenei has said nuclear weapons are prohibited. So they will keep on trying to do this. Now, the reason for the deal, why these people don't like the deal, is because, as far as they see, it alleviated, in quotes, some sanctions. And yes, maybe alleviated one or two types of sanctions, maybe. But the reality is, it's more psychological. They don't want someone to come and do a deal with Iran again.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, a deal with America, anyone who has studied the history of deals that America has made with Iran or with anyone else, you cannot make a deal with America. First of all, America is an infantile country. It's a country whose administration and as an entity, it's less than 300 years old, of which 240 or 250 of those years, it's been in a state of war. It's never had a chance to mature. America is not capable of negotiating fairly and honorably with anyone, even its own neighbors. I mean, this is just like the situation we have in the UK, where the UK is unable to negotiate with even its neighbors for a deal. This negotiation talk, it's a placebo. It doesn't really solve anything.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is what they want is they want Iran to abandon its ballistic missile program that Sarbaz Ruhullah just spoke about, from that was headed up by Aghai Tehrani Muqaddam, Marta Tehrani Muqaddam. And they want Iran to stop its support of the resistance axis, and especially of the Palestinians. If Iran was to do this, then they will negotiate and they will throw money into Iran. They will make Iran everything. They will make Iran a heaven on earth in terms of the Western and the materialist eyes. But Iran will betray the revolution and the blood of the thousands, hundreds of thousands that died in making the victory of the revolution and the eight-year imposed war and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
If Iran was to do that, and Iran won't. Iran is a resilient country. It's wise. It's intelligent. And I know many people have been talking about, what's Iran's response going to be? I think, like you have said, and the other guest has said, this response by Parliament is one tiny element of it. And the enemy needs to understand that Iran is not a country that will just knee-jerk into anything. Iran will take its time. At the end of the day, one of the key things that Iran manufactures are Persian carpets. And Persian carpets take years to manufacture. Anyone who knows anything about them knows. So Iran has got plenty of patience. But one thing we need to be wary about and be careful about is the Zionists creating a false flag attack in somewhere like the Emirates or somewhere in that region, mm-hmm. blaming it on Iran and using that as a pretext. And I think Dr. Khoshash had spoken about that earlier on, or had written about it earlier on, which people can find online.
Okay. Now, Sahab Azrul, the European side of JCPOA has only given lip service, as you know, and insisted the deal must be protected. Yet in practice, they haven't done much to allow Iran to benefit economically, as per the agreement. You know, banking operations, business transactions have been blocked. Sale of crude is facing obstruction. What's Europe waiting for?
I think Europe has proven to be, you know, a puppet of the Americans, and they are highly dependent on the policies of America. So when there is a change of policies in the United States of America, and there's a change of the administration over there, Europe is also changing its stand. So it's exactly the case that you mentioned, that there's nothing beyond lip servicing on behalf of the Europeans. They were not even able to solve the simple issue of SWIFT and simple issue of banking between Iran and the European community, which was so-called independent from the American side of the story, and from the United States side of the story. You know, they were not that involved, but even Europeans were not able to solve that banking process between Iran, because they are so-called, you know, with JCPOA. They by their statements, they condemn the act of terror against Mohsen Fakhrizadeh. They all condemn it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the reality on the ground, nothing is taking place, and it's all because, you know, unfortunately, still they are, you know, obedient. They are, you know, followers and puppets of the Americans as well as the Zionists, because of the pressures of the lobbies, Zionist lobbies over there, as well as the mm-hmm. dependency of the European countries towards the United States of America, unfortunately.
So if you
so everything is ready to be.
Yeah, we have only 1 minute left. If I could put a last question to Shabir. Shabir, what do you anticipate will be the fate of the JCPOA at the threshold of a new administration assuming power at the White House? 1 minute, please.
I think JCPOA is dead. It was dead at the beginning when it was signed. It is dead now. And I think the people that still think it's alive need to accept that it's dead. The Trump administration, Biden administration, Republican, Democrat, makes no difference. They are the same. And, you know, those people who worked very hard for JCPOA, you know, inshallah, they will be rewarded. They need to sit down, you know, maybe go through the grieving process, do a fatiha, as we do when someone passes away, and realize that there is no deal with the U.S. or with the Western powers until they treat Iran as an equal. If they don't, then they can go to hell.
Okay, so it's like flogging dead horse, in your opinion. Thank you very much
for your
comments
so.
And contribution. We had peace and justice activist and analyst Sahab Azrul Rezi from Qom, and writer and political commentator Shabir Hassan Ali, who joined us out of Leicester. Up in your host, Behrouz Najaf, and I'll see you next time.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Scott Atlas has resigned as special advisor to President Donald Trump, a White House official confirmed on Monday, 30th of November, after a controversial 4 months during which he attacked science-based public health measures and clashed repeatedly with other members of the coronavirus task force. "I'm writing to resign from my position as special advisor to the President of the United States," Scott Atlas said in a letter to Donald Trump dated 1st of December, according to Fox News, which first reported his resignation. Scott Atlas later confirmed his resignation in a tweet. Atlas is a neuroradiologist who has no expertise in infectious diseases and has repeatedly and consistently downplayed the threat of the coronavirus. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Julia Carey Wong. The piece is titled, "Scott Atlas Resigns as Trump Pandemic Advisor After Controversial Tenure." Stay with us for more of Julia Carey Wong's article. Scott Atlas has resigned as special advisor to President Donald Trump, a White House official confirmed on Monday, 30th of November, after a controversial 4 months during which he attacked science-based public health measures and clashed repeatedly with other members of the White House coronavirus task force. "I'm writing to resign from my position as special advisor to the President of the United States," Scott Atlas said in a letter to Donald Trump dated 1st of December, according to Fox News Channel, which first reported his resignation. Scott Atlas later confirmed his resignation in a tweet. Atlas is a neuroradiologist and fellow at Stanford University's right-wing Hoover Institution, where he works on healthcare policy. He has no expertise or experience in infectious diseases or epidemiology, yet he was selected by President Donald Trump to advise regarding the pandemic. Atlas joined the White House this summer, where he clashed with top government scientists including Dr. Anthony Fauci and Dr. Deborah Birx, as he resisted stronger efforts to contain the coronavirus pandemic. Scott Atlas attacked public health measures such as wearing face masks, staying at home orders, and social distancing. He called on residents of Michigan to rise up against restrictions put in place by Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, who had been the target of a kidnapping plot leading to calls for his firing. Stanford University neuroradiologist Scott Atlas has repeatedly downplayed the threat of the coronavirus, which has killed more than 265,000 Americans. Atlas also promoted the idea that the U.S. should aim to achieve herd immunity, a so-called strategy that would probably result in millions of deaths, and was repeatedly rebuked by public health experts and infectious disease experts, in addition to Stanford University and the Stanford Faculty Senate. His views also prompted Stanford University to issue a statement distancing itself from the faculty member, saying Scott Atlas has expressed views that are inconsistent with the university's approach in response to the coronavirus pandemic. "We support using face masks, social distancing, and conducting surveillance and diagnostic testing," the university said on 16th of November. Stanford University statement added, "We also believe in the importance of strictly following the guidance of local and state health authorities." Scott Atlas has been sharply criticized by public health experts, including Anthony Fauci, the leading U.S. infectious disease expert, for providing President Donald Trump with misleading or incorrect information on the virus pandemic. He has downplayed the importance of wearing face masks, and this month said lockdowns had been an epic failure in stopping the virus's spread. Scott Atlas defended his role in his resignation letter, saying, "I cannot think of a time where safeguarding science and the scientific debate is more urgent." The resignation comes as the country faces a deadly surge in coronavirus infections and record-high hospitalizations. The United States is currently reporting more than 100,000 new coronavirus cases every day. Dr. Celine Grounder, a member of Joe Biden's advisory panel on the coronavirus crisis, greeted the news of Atlas's resignation with relief. Dr. Celine Grounder said, "I'm relieved that in the future, people who are qualified, people who are infectious disease specialists and epidemiologists like myself, will be helping to lead this effort," she told CNBC. "You wouldn't go to a podiatrist for a heart attack, and that was essentially what was happening." Scott Atlas was hired as a special government employee, which limited his service to the U.S. government to 130 days in a calendar year, a deadline he reached this week. Meanwhile, the United States continue to report more than 100,000 new cases of coronavirus every day over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend, as experts warn the widespread Thanksgiving travel could fuel a surge in the coming weeks. In New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo warned of a problem in the hospitals, a serious situation, and appealed for retired physicians and doctors to return to the front lines. The number of new cases reported in the United States topped 200,000 for the first time on Friday, according to Johns Hopkins University. Since January, when the first U.S. infections were reported, more than 13 million cases have been recorded, and more than 265,000 Americans have died. There was some good news on Monday, 30th of November, as Moderna said it would apply for U.S. authorization to use its coronavirus vaccine. The company announced final results from its trial, which it said confirmed 94% efficacy for the vaccine. Moderna's data will be weighed by the Food and Drug Administration, FDA, on 17th of December. The company said it expected to have doses for 10 million people ready for the U.S. by the end of December. Pfizer and BioNTech submitted an application for emergency use on 20th of November. The news came as the number of hospitalizations in the United States reached a record high. According to the COVID Tracking Project, 93,238 patients were in hospital on Sunday, 29th of November, a steady climb from 47,531 at the start of November, straining health workers and resources as winter approaches. In Rhode Island, hospitals reached COVID-19 capacity on Monday, 30th of November, the same day a two-week pause meant to control the rise in new cases took effect. A state alert to phones read, "Hospitals at capacity due to COVID. Help the front line by staying at home as much as possible for the next 2 weeks."
Iran, IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.